Good morning. Today's daf in Sukkah Chav Gimel. We're starting with the Mishnah Chav Beis Amud Beis. We are continuing along the second parak of the Masechta. We are still working on the construction of a sukkah, what would qualify a sukkah and what would disqualify a sukkah. The Mishnah starts off, Ha'usa Sukkah So Barosh HaGala. So you make your sukkah on the wagon. It's a transportable sukkah. You can move it from location to location. Sukkah on wheels. So that's fine. Al Barosh HaSfina, you make it on the top of the boat. Share in both these cases, the sukkah would be kosher. And on top of that, you could also go on yantiv as well. Okay, again, basic points that we all know, but just to quickly recap, the mitzvah of the yeshiva of sukkahs for 7 days of sukkahs. Lulav and Esrog, which is the third parak of the Masechta, which we're going to be starting in less than a week from now. So that's a mitzvah min haTorah to only take lulav and Esrog on day one of sukkahs. Midrabana, nowadays we take it all 7 days, but the mitzvah of lulav and Esrog min haTorah is just the first day. Meanwhile, when it comes to the mitzvah of yeshiva basukkah, that's all 7 days. Now, of those 7 days, so only one of those days is yantav, the other days are chol hamoed. Now, right, there is an eighth day, but the eighth day, Shmini Atzeres, it's a regel b'fnei atzmo. We're going to be talking about that later in the Masechta. There is no mitzvah of yeshiva basukkah on Shmini Atzeres. Now, I know that's confusing because here in Galus, we do sit in the sukkah on Shmini Atzeres. That's also coming up later in the Masechta, and I don't want to get too sidetracked right now, but I just want to make the basic point that the mitzvah of yeshiva besukkah is for 7 days. Of those 7 days, one day is yantav and the other days are chol hamoed. Now, climbing a tree on chol hamoed is fine. You're allowed to climb a tree on chol hamoed. You're not allowed to climb a tree on yantav. You are allowed to be mishtamish an animal on chol hamoed. You're not allowed to be mishtamish an animal on yantav. So if we're going to be having, right now, we're focusing on trees. We're going to transition to animals in just a moment. But if I have a sukkah that is in a tree, so obviously now that's going to be problematic because on Chol HaMoed you can climb the tree in order to get to your sukkah, but on Yantav you cannot. Now, I say all this by way of introduction. The Gemara, we're going to get to that in just a moment in the Gemara, but the first part of the Mishnah over here is talking about making a sukkah either on a wagon or on a boat. Now, there is no rabbinic restriction whatsoever to go on a wagon or on a boat, even on Shabbos, even on Yantav. A boat does present some halachic issues, but right now I'm just going to say kipshuto, and I'm really going to oversimplify, but on Shabbos and Yantav, so you could be on a boat, right? There is a problem of going on a boat on Shabbos and Yantav because you're going to be moving, in terms of tchum, but just being on the boat in of itself, so there's no problem with that. So therefore, if your sukkah is on the boat, that's fine, according to the Mishnah. If your sukkah is on a wagon, that's fine, according to the Mishnah. What could be the potential problems? Meaning, why does the Mishnah have to mention that if you make it on the wagon, you make it on the boat, it's going to be problematic? Why would I have thought that it's problematic that the Mishnah has to tell me it's okay? So as Rashi points out over here, let's take this one at a time. So let's start off with the wagon. So the wagon right now, sukkah on wheels. So what is a sukkah on wheels? It's really a diras arai. In other words, and it's really arai, meaning over here, literally, you could pick it up and just move it and easily wheel it across and move it to a different location. So even though it's been a common theme throughout the entire Masechta, whether or not the sukkah has to be kever or arai, I might have entertained the idea that this is not just arai, it's like really arai. It's arai de arai, right? Not exactly Rashi's language, but that's the thought process in which I would have thought that you can't do it. And the Mishnah goes out of its way to tell me, no, you can, even though it's arai. Even though it's really all right. Now, in terms of being on top of a boat, what's the problem? So Rashi over here says it clearly, and we're going to see this clearly in the Gemara as well. And that is that when it's on the boat, it's really exposed to the elements. Meaning anytime that you're making your sukkah near your house, there's always going to be something protective around it. And even though there's going to be some wind, but the wind is not going to blow down your sukkah when it's in a generally protected environment. On the boat, however, there really is no protection whatsoever. It really is exposed to the elements. And what could happen now is that you build your sukkah, but it can easily blow down. And as we're going to see, that's now going to be a point of controversy. If you build your sukkah in a manner in which you know it's going to get knocked down, is that going to be considered a sukkah? Good. We're going to see that to be a machlokas in the Gemara in just a couple minutes from now. In the meantime, that's exactly what our Mishnah is telling us. Whoever is the author of our Mishnah, and we will clarify who that is in just a moment, our Mishnah is telling us is that despite the fact that right now your sukkah is in a really tenuous position, that's built on a boat, open to the elements, and it could very easily be blown down. Nevertheless, our Mishnah holds that it's okay. Those are the considerations behind the Mishnah, and as we'll see, as we go through the Gemara is going to clarify these points. Now, Barosh Ilag al Gav Gamal Ksherav Ein Olam B'Yamtav. So let's say you build your sukkah on a tree, right? Instead of a tree house, you have a sukkah house. Tree sukkah? Whatever. You get the point. I build the sukkah on top of the tree. So now sukkah's totally bona fide sukkah. It's a kosher sukkah. However, the problem is that I can't climb it. I can't climb up it on Yontif. On Yontif and on Shabbos, there's an issur d'rabbanan to climb a tree on Yontif and on Shabbos. The reason being is that there's a rabbinic concern that I may go ahead and break a branch while I'm up there. And so therefore, there is a general gzera d'rabbanan that I cannot be mishtamish be'ilan. Being mishtamish be'ilan would include climbing up the tree. So you can't climb up the tree on Yontif mid'rabbanan, which means that the sukkah that you've just made is inaccessible. But of the 7 days of sukkahs, but only for 1 day. Now, it could be 2 days, by the way. In other words, Yontif is 1 day in which you can't access it. And Shabbos, in other words, could be that Shabbos comes out during Chol HaMoed. In fact, probably Shabbos comes out during Chol HaMoed. That'll be the second day. But fine. In other words, you have 7 days of sukkahs. Of those, maybe two of them are going to end up being coming days you can't climb up can't climb up to your sukkah. So fine. But 5 days you can. And the Mishnah is fine with it. So, and the same thing is true regarding an animal. Again, there's an issur d'rabbanan that you cannot be mishamish be'behema. It is related to the gzera d'rabbanan of being mishamish be'ilan. Not to go through the exact gzera right now, but in other words, it's a gzera d'rabbanan. You cannot be mishamish be'behema. You can't ride an animal. And if the sukkah is on top of the back of the animal, right, just as an interesting visual, right, you have a really wide animal and you put a sukkah, you just mount a sukkah right on the back of the animal. So in principle, the sukkah would be good. The problem is that once again, on Yontif and Shabbos, you're going to be banned, rabbinically banned, from climbing up the sukkah. So, v'ein olam abiyontif, that's exactly the Mishnah's point. That on Yontif, and we'll include Shabbos as well, so you're not allowed to go up onto your sukkah that's built either on a tree or on the back of an animal. Now, shtayim be'ilam v'achaz be'de adam, or shtayim be'de adam v'achaz be'ilam k'shera v'ein olam abiyontif. Now, the Mishnah over here describes the following. Now, I'm going to describe the Mishnah as Rashi describes it over here. And again, if you have a picture, that would be really helpful. Okay, in Rashi's understanding over here, where two of the walls are being supported by a tree. In other words, we're still describing a sukkah in a tree. But right now, in terms of what's holding up the sukkah, two of the walls are being held up by the tree. The third wall is being held up by a really long wall that goes all the way down to the ground. Okay, again, if you have a picture, it's really helpful to see it. So that basically means now that of my sukkah, two are being supported by the tree, and one is goes all the way down to the ground. Or conversely, shayim bide adav achaz be'ilan, or maybe two of the walls go all the way down to the ground, but one of the walls is being supported by the tree. In these circumstances, because now of my sukkah, remember the base minimum shear of a sukkah is that it has to have three walls. And right now, if two of those walls are being supported by a tree, so that means to say now that the kashrus of the sukkah is being supported by a tree, and therefore you can't climb up it on Yontif. Certainly, once again, you could use it on Chol HaMoed, that's not a problem, but you can't use it on Yontif. Now, shalosh bi de'adam v'achaz bi'ilan k'shera v'on la b'yontif. Now, let's say if my sukkah was three of the walls had the walls going all the way down to the ground, and it happens to be that the sukkah had a fourth wall, and that fourth wall is being supported by a tree, that's fine. Because even if I were to remove that tree, I'd be left with a kosher sukkah, so that would be okay, that would be acceptable. The Mishnah says that klal, and over here, just to give us a general rule of what we just learned, as we now turn to the top of Chav Gimel Amid Aleph, kol shenitala ilam v'yechola amah b'fnei atzmak shera v'olan la b'yantav. If the tree were to remove and the sukkah would be still self-standing, so that would be a kosher sukkah, and you would be allowed to use it, not only during Chol HaMoed, but even on Yontif itself. Okay. That is the Mishnah. So much to discuss over here. Let's start with the Gemara. So the Gemara attacks the first part of the Mishnah. Not attacks it, but just, you know, clarifies. Mani Masnisen, the author of our Mishnah. Who is the author of our Mishnah? Specifically, the first case of the Mishnah where you built your sukkah on a boat. So again, the Mishnah first opened up with two cases. One is building it on a boat, and the other one is building it on a wagon. So Mani Masnisen Rabbi Akiva Yiditanya. So the Gemara says that the building of the boat, that is a position subscribed to by Rabbi Akiva. How do I know that? How says Sukkas Barosh Asfina Rabbi Gamliel post Rabbi Akiva Machshir? Because we see it's a machlokes between Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Akiva as to whether or not the sukkah can in fact be built on a boat. Rabbi Gamliel says no. The sukkah would be a pasul sukkah for reasons which we're going to articulate in just a moment. And Rabbi Kiva is perfectly comfortable with the idea of the sukkah being on the boat. Maisa Berman Gamaliel, Rabbi Kiva Shayu Ban Bisvina. Okay, and we have a maisa, we have an episode, an incident where it's sukkahs and Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Gamaliel are traveling on a boat. And Amad Rabbi Kiva Vasa Sukkah Barosh Asvina. And Rabbi Kiva made the sukkah on the boat. Lamacha Nash Va'aruach Va'akarta. The next day the wind blew and blew down the sukkah. So uprooted the sukkah. So Amarlo Rabbi Gamaliel Akiva Hechan Sukaska. So Rabbi Gamaliel looks at Rabbi Kiva, and I'm going to add like a just a small little smile, just a tiny smile on the part of Rabbi Gamaliel. And he says to Rabbi Kiva, "New, where's your sukkah?" He knows full well. He knows full well where his sukkah is. The question at hand over here is, you knew it was going to fall down. You knew it was going to be blown down. So you built the sukkah in such a precarious situation in which you knew that the sukkah was going to come down. Ergo, your sukkah wasn't a good sukkah to begin with. So, you cannot build a sukkah in such a precarious situation. So here we have now the machlokes between Rabbi Gamaliel and Rabbi Kiva, not just in terms of lamdus, but also played out practically speaking. Rabbi Gamaliel says to Rabbi Kiva, "I told you so." Meaning, by the way, according to Rabbi Gamaliel, even if the wind had not blown it down, obviously he would have said that's a pasul sukkah. But by virtue of the fact that the wind is in fact easily blown it down, so that's proof positive that look, you can't build a sukkah in such a precarious state.
I wonder where it was in Rabbi Gamaliel didn't have a sukkah.
And presumably that meant that Rabbi Gamaliel didn't have a sukkah. In other words, he can't build a sukkah. Now there's plenty you can eat without having to be in the sukkah. The first night's gonna be problematic. I don't know how I don't know how he circumnavigated that, but yeah, he didn't have a sukkah. We'll see. It's a little bit early. Let's go through a little bit more Gemara, as the Gemara is going to frame now the discussion between Rabbi Gamaliel and Rabbi Kiva. Amar Abai de Kolei Amad Hecha de Ina Yechol Amad Baruch Metsuya de Abash Lo Klomay. Okay, so Abai says as follows. Let's frame the machlokes between Rabbi Gamaliel and Rabbi Kiva. If your sukkah is so fragile that it can't stand even the tiniest breeze, right? The Gemara describes it as a Ruch Metsuya de Abasha. Right, your dry land and the breeze blows, and I mean here in Florida we get no breeze, but okay, fine, nothing. All right, okay, except when there's a hurricane, and then obviously it overcompensates for the lack of breeze the rest of the time. But for those of you who have ever lived anywhere else, so you get occasional breezes. And that's fine. If your sukkah can't handle that, so then kuliam, everyone agrees that you have not, you don't have a sukkah. Meaning, even if you're at the position of your sukkah is a sukkah sarai, the dira sarai, and it's a temporary structure, but still there has to be some substance to the sukkah. Your sukkah can't be so fragile that it can't handle just a regular breeze. So then the Gemara says, kuliam, according to everybody, you don't have a sukkah. Fine. And Yechol Amad B'Sheina Metsuya, Hecha Di Eina Yechol Amad Baruch Metsuya Di Abasha Lo Klomi. Yechol Amad B'Sheina Metsuya Di Abasha Kol Amad Lo Pliga Dik Sheira. And if your sukkah can withstand the kind of breeze that, an Eina Metsuya, right? An unusual wind, a really strong wind, and it could withstand that, that would be kosher. Ki Pliga B'Di Yechol Amad Baruch Metsuya Di Abasha V'Eina Yechola. Now the girsa over here, right? The Bach touches up the girsa, if you will, just a little bit. Sorry. Yeah. I'm just getting the right girsa. So, So let's say now we're somewhere in between. In other words, for the land, this is it could withstand. Let's say like this. When you're out in the water, so you're going to be getting a stronger breeze. Okay. In other words, again, out in the water, there are no mountains. There's nothing mitigating the breeze. So, by definition, the out in the water is going to be a stronger breeze. So now your sukkah, if you took this sukkah and put it on land, where again the breeze is going to be a little bit calmer. You have mountains. You have houses. You have things that mitigate the wind. So, but if you took the exact same sukkah and put it out in the ocean, it's not a particularly strong breeze, but for the ocean, this is normal. And it can withstand that. So Abaye says, that is exactly the machlokes between Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Gamaliel. Rabbi Gamaliel suffers sukkah diras keva be'inam bekevim de'ini cholam od baruch mitsuya diyam lav klomi. So Rabbi Gamaliel says that, look, my starting point is that your sukkah has to be a diras keva. Now you remember, go back to Daf Zayin again, right? Daf Zayin is like one of those like really cornerstone dapim here in our Masechta in terms of identifying, right? Who says that your sukkah has to be Diras Kefa? There are a lot of Tanaim who are of that position. You remember on Daf Zayin, so we strung together, I forget the exact number, should have looked it up, but about a half dozen Tanaim who are of the position that your sukkah has to be Diras Kefa. Right, included in that list, let's just to give you some highlights, right? Rabbi Yehuda, who says that your sukkah can be higher than 20 amas, because he holds it, his sukkah is the dearest keva, right? We just went over the shita of Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, right? That your sukkah is dal by dal amos. So he also says that your sukkah has to be the dearest keva. And the list of other Tanaim, Rami Gamliel was in that list. And over here, right, that same Rami Gamliel that we're discussing right now. So fine, so there are a handful, more than a handful of Tanaim would say that your sukkah has to be a Diras Keva, including Rebbe Gamliel. And so therefore, if your sukkah cannot withstand a normal sea wind, so then it's not going to be a good sukkah. So, Eini Yechol Mabruch Mitzvah Diyam Lo Klumi. And Rebbe Kiva suffered sukkah Diras Arai. And on this issue, Rebbe Kiva takes the other position, which is that your sukkah can be a Diras Arai. Now again, we'll go back to the very first daf of Masechta. That doesn't mean that your sukkah has to be a diras arai. It just simply means that the Torah for your sukkah demands nothing more than just a temporary residence. And if it can handle a regular breeze, a land breeze, even though it can't handle a sea breeze, that's fine. That's enough. So sukkah diras arai beinam bekevin diacholam od baruch mitzui diabashak sheira. And as long as it can handle a regular land breeze, even though it happens to be right now you're on the ocean and you're on a boat, and you're going to be building a sukkah, and the breeze on the ocean is going to be stronger, but that doesn't mean that you have to fortify your sukkah. All you need to do is make a sukkah that would have been good enough, where had you been on the land, that would have been sufficient, and that's fine, and that would make for an acceptable sukkah. Now, granted, pragmatically speaking, as Rabbi Gamliel, like Riley, smiles at Rabbi Akiva and says, "No, where's your sukkah?" So pragmatically speaking, if you're out in the ocean and it's just not going to last, obviously it'd probably be prudent to fortify it. But the point being is that according to Rabbi Akiva, it doesn't have to be. As long as it's good enough to handle a land breeze, that would be fine. That would be sufficient in order to make it a kasher sukkah. That is the Gemara says, the machlokes between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Gamliel. Okay, the Gemara doesn't mention, before we embark on the next sukkah, the Gemara doesn't mention that whether or not this is going to be tied to a sukkah ba'agala. Meaning, in the Mishnah, you remember, there were two cases in the Mishnah. One was sukkah b'sfina, and the other one was sukkah ba'agala, the first two cases of the Mishnah. So by sukkah b'sfina, now we know, it's a machlokes between Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Kiva. Same by sukkah ba'agala? Different by sukkah ba'agala? I gave you something to think about. I gave myself something to think about. I don't know. But the, but presume... Right.
For sure.
Right.
And the wine
can,
you don't have
the wine. Could be. I'm with you. I just, I don't know. I don't know, but I would assume, if I had to guess, I'd say like you. They're not arguing about sukkah ba'agala.
Yeah, but you can say that even if it's on the land, it's the same thing,
I will point out that when Rashi explains the Mishnah, right, how osa sukkah barosha agala, so af agav de mitatala velo kviya. So Rashi back in the Mishnah says the problem with the sukkah on the wagon is that it's just not keva. So again, if I were to make an argument, I could argue and say that Rebbe Gamliel demands that the sukkah be keva, and he wouldn't like that as well. Again, the Gemara doesn't say it. The Gemara just doesn't mention it. Okay, so that's why I leave the question open-ended, at least at this point. Oh, agabe gamal. Okay, putting your sukkah now on the back of a camel. So Masisa Mani Rebbe Meir Ditanya. So the Gemara says that our Mishnah is following the Shita of Rebbe Meir, because we have the following Braisa. Okay, now we're about to embark on a lengthy discussion in the Gemara about using animals as a floor for your sukkah, a wall for your sukkah, and it's gonna be a long discussion. In fact, the discussion will not end until tomorrow, meaning this is a 2-day event in terms of the daf. So today we will only get through about half the discussion. And tomorrow we get to conclude the discussion, concerns about using an animal and what exactly the concerns may be. So it's going to be a lengthy discussion. So just everyone fasten your seatbelt and get ready for a long discussion. Obviously, in terms of today's daf, we're only going to present today's daf's version of the discussion, but tomorrow's like a part two, if you will, of this discussion. So let's begin. So Masisa Mani Rabbi Meir here, our Mishnah is the Shita of Rabbi Meir. The Tanya will learn the Braisa. So, Sukasa Agabe Behemer, Rabbi Meir Machshav Rav Yehuda Posel. So if you make your sukkah on the back of an animal, so Rav Meir says it's fine, and Rav Yehuda says that's possible. My time is Rav Yehuda, and the reason behind Rav Yehuda that says that's possible, so Amar Kach, Chagas Sukkos Tasalach, Shivas Yamim. So you make a sukkah for yourself for 7 days. So sukkah arui l'shiva shma sukkah, sukkah shein arui l'shiva lo shma sukkah. So Rav Yehuda says, look, the definition of a sukkah is that it has to be for 7 days. If I made a sukkah and it's not for 7 days, so then it's not going to be a sukkah. Now, that means a couple of things. One, so the obvious point, which we're past already, but I'll just back it up to make the obvious point, and that is that, let's say, for whatever reason, you didn't make your sukkah on the first day of sukkahs, and now it's Chol HaMoed, and you're without a sukkah. Okay, fine, so I'll make my sukkah on Chol HaMoed, right? So if you ask Rav Yehuda, Rav Yehuda says, no, you can't do that. In other words, by definition, your sukkah has to be for 7 days. And right now, you're only going to be enjoying your sukkah for 5 days, 4 days, so that's no good. So in other words, your sukkah, by definition, has to be for 7 days. That's point number one for Rabbi Yehuda. But now we're going to get on to point number two. Even if, let's say, it's before sukkahs, but you're going to make your sukkah in a manner in which it will be inaccessible for 1 day. For 1 day, so then that's not going to be a sukkah as well. Your sukkah has to be accessible and usable for all 7 days. So that means now that according to Rabbi Yehuda, if you make your sukkah in a manner in which you can't access it on Yontif, even though what's barring you from going up on the sukkah on Yontif? Gzeirah d'Rabbanan. Okay, but it doesn't matter.
You're saying 7 days minimum, not 7 days maximum.
I mean, it is 7 days. Oh, sukkah is 7 days.
Right. No, no. But you're saying that you're saying that the sukkah has to be like usable for at least 7 days, or not more than 7 days.
I understand that, but the point becomes moot. In other words, sukkahs are 7 days.
Right.
In other words, what we mean is all 7 days of sukkahs. It has to be accessible and usable for all 7 days of sukkahs. So now, granted, what's barring you and banning you from going up on the sukkah is Gzeirah d'Rabbanan. It's a rabbinic decree. Doesn't matter. What Rabbi Yehuda will tell you is that for whatever reason, even if it be a rabbinic decree, if that's what's banning you and going up on the sukkah on 1 day, so that means now that this sukkah is only good for 6 days. No good. Sukkah now is not going to be good. The sukkah has to be accessible for all 7 days. So that is Shitas Rabbi Yehuda. Okay, now what's the counter argument? So Rameir Hanami Midaraisa Mechzechazi Rabbanu Degazobe. So interesting. What I could have argued is that Rameir doesn't have such a drasha. The Gemara doesn't go in that direction. The Gemara says that maybe Rameir even has a drasha, that the sukkah needs to be made for all 7 days. It just happens to be that right now what's banning and barring you from going up on the sukkah is that it's on an animal. And what is that? That's a Gzeirah d'Rabbanan. So Min HaTorah. Am I allowed to go into my sukkah? Yes. Yes, Min HaTorah I'm allowed to. Now, granted that the Chachamim banned me from doing so, but if I took away just for a moment, just to be able to look at the sukkah, if I took away the Gzeirah d'Rabbanan and asked a simple question, can I go up on that sukkah? The answer is going to be yes. Now, again, practically, of course, the answer is no because of the rabbinic ban. But right now, if I remove that, is the sukkah itself acceptable? Yeah, acceptable for all 7 days. So therefore, it qualifies as a kosher sukkah. Obviously, Reb Meir is not for a moment suggesting that we just simply ignore the Gzeirah d'Rabbanan. We're ignoring it for the purpose of looking it at it as a qualified structure. It is, in fact, a qualified structure. And still, you can't go up on Shabbos and on Yom Tov. Correct. Okay. Also, Behema Dofen L'Sukkah, fine. So that is a discussion in terms of putting your sukkah on an animal and whether or not such a sukkah would qualify as a sukkah. It's a machlok between Rameir and Rav Yehuda. Again, our Mishnah clearly is adopting the position that it's fine, it's acceptable, which actually kind of makes sense, meaning that we just learned it's a machlok between Rameir and Rav Yehuda. Rameir, oddly enough, comes out as a mekel, meaning generally speaking, Rameir is a more cautious position. But on this particular issue, Rameir is a mekel, and it makes sense, meaning our Mishnah is a stam Mishnah, and our Mishnah is following the viewpoint of Rav Meir. Okay, that part, great. Good. Now we're moving on to the next part of the discussion, and that is using an animal as one of the walls of a sukkah. Okay, now you cannot, right, Pita would not be happy with the upcoming discussion of basically utilizing an animal as a wall. And in terms of making sure that it stays there, okay. So this is not a, this would not make the modern sensibilities happy, but okay. That's not my concern. My concern is a proper understanding of the Gemara. So also lebehema dofen l'sukkah. So let's say you're going to use an animal as a wall for the sukkah. So that does that work? So Rameir posel Rav Yehuda machshir. So over here we are now flipping. So Rabbi Meir comes out to be a posel. He says, no, you cannot. And Rabbi Yehuda says that it's kosher. It'd be fine. Now, what's that issue over here? Okay, Shahayir Meir Omer called Davish Yesh Baruch Chaim, and also Nosolo Dofen Lasukha Velech Lamavu Velo Pasen Lebeiros Velo Gol Lekever. So, and Rabbi Meir says that in general, you can't use an animal. You cannot use an animal as a wall for a sukkah and not as a lechi for a mavui. Okay, we've been discussing this already numerous times in our Masechta, all the way back to the first daf of our Masechta. We talked about the mavui and the correction of the mavui, the tikkun mavui. One of the ways you do so is by putting a lechi at its entrance. And let's say instead of a pole, you just simply put an animal over there. No, Rabbi Meir says no. And pasen lebeiros. And now you want to make your brackets, your four brackets, right? Your ola lerego. And the rabbis give an allowance from which all you have to do is just put four brackets in the four corners. Again, I'm oversimplifying right now, not going through all the details. And now that's an enclosed area, that's a reshus ha'yachid, and you're now allowed to draw water from the from that pit in the center in order over the course of that Shabbos. And now, what are you going to use as brackets? So you could use walls, makeshift walls. According to a mayor, you can't use an animal. Right, tying an animal in the corner, using it as pasei beiraus, you can't do that according to Rav Meir. And lo golo lekever, golo lekever, that's a cover for the aron, the cover for the aron, according to Rav Meir, it's not going to serve as a golo lekever. We'll talk more about this, not today, but we'll go over it tomorrow. Rashi's of the position that the golo over here is talking about the aron. It's a lid of the aron, and the lid of an aron is an avatoma. It's metame, not only b'maga, not only b'masa, but even b'oel. See Rashi over here for more description of that. So the animal cannot be used as a golel lekever. Okay. And mishum Rabbi Yosi Aglili amru afin kosher nalav gitei nashim. And just Rabbi Yosi Aglili has one addendum, and that is that I can't write a get on it as well. Meaning, in other words, a husband wants to write a get for his wife. He writes it on nier, he writes it on paper. What about writing on an animal? So the Gemara says, no, you can't write it on, according to Rav Yossi, you can't write it on an animal as well. Okay, so let's focus right now just on the usage of the animal as a wall for the sukkah. I know we added a lot of other things to the list, but let's just focus on the wall, on using the animal as a wall. So again, now the focus is on Shitas Rav Meir. Oddly enough, as we just went over, according to Rav Meir, if you took your sukkah and put it on the back of an animal, that's fine. You can't use it for all 7 days. Rav Meir says, I know, that's fine. But it qualifies. It qualifies as a sukkah. But then, if I took the animal and used it as a wall for the sukkah, Rav Meir says, that you cannot do. And Rav Yehuda disagrees. And Rav Yehuda says you could use it as a wall for the sukkah. So the obvious question, which the Gemara now is going to start, and as I mentioned, this is a two-day affair. So this is only part one of the discussion. And that is, my time of the Rabbi Meir. Okay, so why? Why, according to Rav Meir, can I not use an animal as a wall? What's the issue? So, Abai Amar Shematamos, Rabbi Zera Amar Shemativrach. Okay, so, according to our first round of discussion, it's a Gzera Derabanan. It's a Shema. It's a concern. Now, what is the concern going to be predicated on? So, it's a Machlokes between Abai and Rabbi Zera. According to Abai Shematamos, the animal may die. Okay? Now, the animal may die. So what? Again, So you're saying the correct shot. Right? At first, when I read the Gemara, I thought I was going to say a really wonderful pshat, and that is, who wants to be sitting in a sukkah right now as I have a rotting carcass lying down right next to me? Right? Similar, actually, to a Gemara that we saw earlier in the Masechta, where if you make your schach out of something that really is foul-smelling, and no one wants to be there, so the Gemara said earlier that that's not going to be a good sukkah. That's a, right? Or similarly, the Gemara said earlier that if I have, right, a really low sukkah, and I, right, 10 tefachim, but the schach now is going into the sukkah, so the Gemara described it as a dira srucha, and that's not a good sukkah. And so over here, right, I would have suggested a really simple pshat, and that is that if the animal is dead and rotting right next to me, right, come join me in my sukkah. No one's going to want to join me in my sukkah, and the truth of the matter is I probably wouldn't want to go in that sukkah as well. Okay, that's all well and good, and that's what I thought the pshat would be. That's not the pshat. The pshat is like Phil said. In other words, if the animal dies, so now what? So now basically the animal slumped to the ground, and now you no longer have a wall. Okay, and maybe I... okay, we'll get to the elephant in the room in just a moment. But it could be that I'm... whatever, I don't have to defend a pshat that the Gemara doesn't say. So, but I still think that to a certain degree I may end up being right, but doesn't matter. The Gemara is just dealing with the much more practical and real issue of, you may not have a wall if the animal dies. So that's the sheet of Abai, Shema Tamos. And Rabbi Zera Amar Shema Tivrach. And Rabbi Zera also deals with another very pragmatic issue. And that is that you tell the animal, stay. Okay, the animal has a mind of its own. And the animal may decide, you know what? I don't want to just sit here for a week. Okay, right. Okay, good. So Shema Tivrach. The animal may run away. So Bipil Kasher Kuli Amalo Pligidi. So the Gemara says like this. Well, now that we gave out two concerns, the animal may die, the animal may run away. So now let's contextualize all this and let's put it. Let's see if we can plug all this in. So let's say it's an elephant and the animal and the elephant is tied up. So with the tied up elephant, so what concerns do we have? So given our choices of either the animal dying or the animal running away, so the concern would be no concern. So the Gemara says, Kuli Amalo Pligidi Inami Meis Yesh Benivlas Oyun. Elephant is an exceptionally large animal. If it dies, the carcass is still going to be 10 tefachim above ground. And keep pligi, and the animal running away, well, if it's tied up, it's not going to run away. Now, I know it's an elephant, and whatever you tied it up, and probably, elephant could probably handle that. But anyway, but you get the basic idea. Meaning, if you're expressing what the concerns are, and we can take away those concerns, so fine, so then maybe it would be okay. And keep pligi, bepil sheino kasher. So the Gemara says, now if the elephant's not tied up, so now we're going to have a nafkamina. So laman damer shema tamos lo chayshina. Well, if the animal dies, well, okay. Again, it's an elephant. I'm going to have the carcass still being above 10 tefachim. And laman damer zera shema tevra chayshina laman. I'm sorry, chayshina. So, if we're afraid the animal's going to run away, well, if the elephant is not tied up, the animal may run away. So the Gemara says, wait 1 second. So laman damer zera shema tamos necha shema tevra. So Abaye, you're not worried right now like Rabbi Zera is? Meaning, Abaye, you said the issue is that the animal may die. And over here by an elephant, it's not a concern. But if you're not tying up the animal, like you're not worried that the animal's going to walk off? Like we're turning to Abaye and we're saying, is this Rabbi Zera concern? Like it doesn't concern you? So the Gemara says, you're right. The Gemara says, you're right. Abaye will concede to Rabbi Zera. If the animal's not tied up, to expect the animal to be there for 7 days is not reasonable. So keep pligi bebehem ukshura. So the Gemara says, okay. So the nafkamina now will be where the animal is in fact tied up. Now, if you're worried that the animal is going to die, so obviously if the animal, we're not talking about an elephant right now. We're talking about an animal that's just above 10 tefachim in its height. And now the animal may die. And again, it'll just simply collapse to the ground. And you don't have a wall. And Lamanda Amrikzer Shema Tivrach Lo Chayshinan. But because it's tied up, so we're not worried. So the Gemara says, Lamanda Amrikzer Shema Tivrach Nechu Shema Tamus. So the Gemara now says, now we're turning to Rabbi Zera. Rabbi Zera, I know you're worried about the animal running away, and we tied it up so it's not a concern. What about you not being worried about what Abai is concerned about? Meaning you're not worried the animal's going to die? So the Gemara says, yeah. Misa Lo Shchicha. So the Gemara says, yeah. Meaning my concern does not have to include Abai's concern. Rabbi Zera says, look, if the animal's not tied up, I'm legitimately concerned that the animal's going to run away for good reason. To expect an animal to just simply be stationary for 7 days, that's not reasonable. But the animal dying within a week, I don't have to be concerned about that. I'm just not.
It's a cheskes
chani. Right? You'll feed the animal, whatever. Okay, va'aika ravcha debeni beni. So the Gemara says, okay, now let's see if we could just attack some of the most basic issues. First of all, the animal standing on four legs, which means now that there's a lot of empty space underneath the animal. So a mechitza has to go down to the floor, at least be within 3 tefachim of the ground. So right now, if we're talking about an animal that has long legs, so aren't you missing now walls on the bottom? So the Gemara says, yeah. So davile behutza v'dafna. So the Gemara says that, yeah, but what you did is you made a little fence underneath the animal. Ah, okay, good. So v'dilma rav'ah. So the Gemara says, okay. Right now, the animal's standing. Okay, but for 7 days, the animal's going to stand? Meaning, aren't you concerned that even if the animal doesn't die, isn't the animal just going to, like, slump, right? Slouch? So the Gemara says, de misicha be'ashle mila'el. Oh, well, no, you harness the animal with ropes, attaching it to the frame above. Okay, so granted, by the way, we don't have a great picture right now. This is not a snapshot that you would send out nowadays. But, okay, just for simple shot of the Gemara. So now what we have is that we have our animal where it is harnessed up, so we know now that it's not going to fall to the ground. We also made a little fence underneath it. So that way we have fenced up the airspace underneath. Okay, good. So now we're all good. So the machlokes between Abaye and Rabbi Zera within the Shita Rameir, again, just to organize everything nice and clearly. Rabbi Yehuda says that you could use it as a wall. Rameir says you can't use it as a wall. Now, what's the basis for Rameir? So right now we're within a world of Shema, of Gzera, of we're concerned. What the concern is the machlokes between Abaye and Rabbi Zera. Abaye says the concern is that the animal may die and therefore be reduced from its ten tefachim. And according to Rabbi Zera, the animal may run away. And right now we have a nafkamina between these two reasons, and that is that I tied up the animal. So Rabbi Zera says, okay, you've removed the concern because the animal's not going to run away. And Rabbi Zera says, I'm not worried that the animal's going to die. And Abaye will say, no, that what Rabbi Meir's concerned is that the animal's going to die. And even if I tied it up, but because of the concern of the death of the animal, so that would still be a concern. This is all now how we have presented the Shita of Rabbi Meir. As we're on the very bottom of Chav Gimel Amud Aleph, so the Gemara says, okay. Now, what do we say that one of the concerns is, Abaye's concern, the animal's going to die. Given the ukimta that we've just given, you have now harnessed the animal to the frame. You have made a little fence underneath the animal. So what if the animal dies? So if the animal dies, you still have the physical carcass of the animal. And it's harnessed. So what are you worried about? So Zimnan Demukim Bepachos Mishlosha Samach Lesach. V'sichech. V'kevan. We turn to the top of the Amud Beis. V'kevan demaisei kavsa v'lavadaitai. So the Gemara says like this. Maybe what happened is the following. So you harnessed it, but you harnessed it where it was precisely 10 tefachim above ground. Right? Just within, within 3 tefachim of the ground. Let me do it the other direction. Right? You position the animal right now where it is just above 7 tefachim from the ground. Okay? You made a little fence under its legs, but it's just above 7 tefachim from the ground. Now, what makes this a kosher sukkah is that we know that within 3 tefachim we have the principle of lovin. So the 7 plus of the animal plus the just under the 2.9 tefachim of airspace now that gets me to the 10 tefachim marker. So good. So now I have a wall. Great. Now that I have a wall, so now what? So even though the animal's harnessed, but the animal's going to die. If the animal dies, so what's going to happen is that the animal will shrivel just a little bit. The word kavtsa, right? Phil, I know you're going to appreciate this. Look at the Rashi. Mis ma'etas, retreat. Okay? It shrinks. The animal's going to shrink just a little bit if it dies. Right? And therefore, look, the kashrus of the sukkah, we were just on the edge of kashrus when the animal was alive. And now if the animal dies, so now it's going to shrink oh so little, but doesn't matter. Oh so little will mean that the schach now is going to be, sorry, not the schach. The mechitza now is going to be a mechitza psula because you just simply don't have the minimum shear, and that's why we're concerned. Now, admittedly, by the way, you imagine now where the Gemara has painted itself into this corner of being the Gzeira de Rabbanan is why? So according to Abaye, despite the fact that the animal is harnessed and you have a fence under its legs, but the concern is that we have situated the animal in such a manner where it represents just the base minimum shear of a wall, and if it were to die, so then it would shrink and you wouldn't notice. And you don't have it no longer kosher sukkah. So admittedly, as far as Gzeira is concerned, like we're really out there in terms of presenting what the concern is in this circumstance. Now, generally speaking, when we talk about Gzeira, it's Gzeira that is a more prevalent or prominent concern. So again, that's why I encourage, come back tomorrow where the Gemara is going to go basically through a round two of this discussion and give a totally different position within Reb Meir. Because you see that as we're trying to explain Reb Meir through the lens of Gzeira, we've really painted ourselves into a really narrow corner in doing so. Okay, so we're still going to finish up the daf today. We still got a little bit more to finish up the daf, but just I'm hoping everyone appreciates like where we are in the Gemara in terms of trying to explain Rav Meir through a Gzeira. Okay, Umi Amar by Rav Meir Chayish Lemisa Rav Yehuda Lo Chayish. Now it comes out now that the way Rav Meir has explained it, according to Abaye, so that means that Rav Meir is Choshish Lemisa and Rav Yehuda is not Choshish Lemisa. That's how we have it presented according to Abaye. Good. The Gemara says the problem is, I don't think that's right. V'hatanan. Because we have to consider the following. We're going to learn two Mishnahs together. First Mishnah. So one Mishnah tells us the following. So you have a Bas Yisrael, she's married to a Kohen. As now being married to a Kohen, so now she's entitled to eat Truma. Right? The king in Kaspo, the Torah says that any time that a Kohen has either a wife or an Eved Kenani, or a Shivcha Kenani, so they can eat Truma. So his wife now, even though she herself is not a Kohen, but being married to a Kohen, gives her the rights and entitlements to eat Truma. But that of course, her rights and entitlement is only predicated on the fact that she's married to a Kohen. Now, let's say it happens to be that he goes off on a long business trip, and it's been a moment, and now does she have to be concerned that if she in fact is a widow, she's no longer allowed to eat truma? So is that a concern? So the Mishnah says no, it's not a concern. In other words, he went off; he had a cheskas chayim. The cheskas chayim, that presumption of him being alive continues. Okay. So far, so good. Viraminan Allah, but on that Mishnah, we have now the following brisa. So now we have the following brisa. A husband goes away, and before he goes away, he does not, in other words, in the event of some catastrophe where he dies, he'd rather his wife be a divorcee as opposed to a widow. Now, there are certain advantages of being a divorcee as opposed to a widow. Primarily Yibam is the biggest advantage. Okay, and maybe he would leave her in a position of Yibam, and he knows his brother, and he knows that's not the best position for her to be in right now. So he gives her a get, and he says, now the get will be effectuated an hour before I die. Now we know, ain't get lachar misa, the get obviously cannot take effect after he dies. So he puts a provision in the get, that the get will be effectuated 1 hour before he dies. And then he goes off. So according to this brisa, so now, because of the concern that he may die at any point in time, she cannot eat truma. Oh. So obviously what we have over here is a really simple stira between the Mishnah and the Braisa. The Mishnah says is that a husband's away, she can enjoy the truma, becheskas chaim, that her husband's still alive. And in the Braisa says, no, we have to be concerned that he died at any point in time, and therefore she cannot eat truma immediately for that concern. Good. So that's a stira. Now we know what the resolution is going to be. Some Tanaim are of the position that I'm worried, and some Tanaim are of the position that we're not worried. And listen carefully to how Abaye explains it. The Amar Abaye Lokasha HaRebi Meir de Lo Chayish Lamisa, HaRav Yehuda de Chayish Lamisa. So, and the way Abaye explains it, now that's obviously critical, because what the Gemara now is going to pit is the way Abaye explains this stira, and the way Abaye explained Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda of our discussion of using an animal for a sukkah, for the walls of a sukkah. So the way Abaye explains it is that Rav Meir is the one who is not choshesh lamisa, and that represents the mission that says that she can eat truma, she can enjoy her truma, and the brisa that says that she can eat truma immediately the moment he leaves, that's Shitas Rav Yehuda, who is choshesh lamisa. Now, Abaye says, how do I know that I explained it correctly? D'tanya, because we have a braisa. Now this braisa, we get to hear the braisa all the time. In fact, we just went through it together in Yuma. And so now we get to enjoy the braisa again. So far, since we started Shas, we saw this braisa in Yuma, we saw it back in Erevin. And now this is going to be our third round of seeing the braisa since we started Shas anew. And that is, okay, Chiyami ben Akusim, so you purchased wine from Akusi, and you have to and you want to drink it. The problem is you have to take off Trumas and Maisos. And now Rashi points out over here, as we saw back at Rashi and Yuma as well, that you're buying wine from a Kusi. You're allowed to do that. So there was a period in time where there was all wine produced by a Kusi were banned. We are describing over here a period in time where this was before the Gzeira. So you were allowed to do that. Now, you had to be Mafish Trumas and Maisos. Now, this is not the mine. Rashi makes this point very clear. Meaning, when you buy from an Amma Aret, so you take off Trumas and Maisos, but as a Chumrah. Over here, the Kusi did not take off Trumas and Maisos. Now, why that is, I'm not going to explain right now. Just for our purposes right now, let's just simply say he did not take off Trumas and Maisos. So you have to do so. And as Rashi points out over here, it's Erev Shabbos, right? And you just simply don't have time to get another Kli. Or Rashi says, alternatively, you don't have a Tara Kli around. So for you to take off Truma and to put it in a Tamei Kli, that's a really bad idea, because then the Truma is going to be Tameya. And that becomes more or less useless to a Kohen. So okay, fine. So what you want to do is the following. You're basically going to drink the wine and whatever's left over, that will be your truma and that will be your meiser. You have to be mafresh it before. So we have a concept called breira. Whatever I leave over retroactively will be the part of it that I wanted to take off from the very beginning. Huvra adavar lamafreya. Retroactive determination, a topic that comes up all throughout Shas. And this breira usually is a launching pad of discussing the concept of breira. So here's what you do. So two of the 100, we assume that there are 100 lugin. So two of the 100, which is left over, so obviously which I will leave over, so that's going to be the truma that I wanted to take off from the very beginning. Asara Meister Rishon, Tisha Meister Sheni, Umechal, Vishosamiyah Divrei Rabbi Meir. And so what you'll do is the two I'm going to leave over the end, that'll be truma. 10 I will also leave over at the end, that'll be my Meister Rishon. Now there's another 10 that needs to be Meister Sheni, but Meister Sheni I could be Poda. I could redeem that. And the way Rashi presents it over here, I'll simply redeem it on money within my house. So there, I don't even have to rely on Breira. I'll just simply redeem it onto money. And now, Shosamiyah, you drink it right away. Divrei Meir, that is Shitas Rabbi Meir. And Rabbi Yehuda, as we turn to the top of Chavdal Amad Aleph, and Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Shimon, Osrim, and Rabbi Yehuda, and Rabbi Yosef, and Rabbi Shimon, they say that it's Asur. And the concern is Shema Yivaka Hanod. Well, in other words, yes. So we actually subscribe to Breira. We're comfortable with the idea of Breira. The problem is that it may fall, it may break, and we won't even get to Breira. And then retroactively, what it turns out is that I ate Tevel. That means to say that according to Rabbi Yehuda, we're worried about the jug breaking, and if we're worried about the jug breaking, so then we're worried about a person dying. Now, I know that's a funny leap that we just made, right? Worried about a jug breaking and we're worried about a person dying. But in other words, he is cautious. He's cautious. That's the basic idea. And if we're worried about somebody dropping a jug and it breaking, so then I'd also be cautious and worried about a person dying as well. And the, so now what comes out is the following. So we now just have learned together that Rabbi Yehuda takes a cautious position and Rabbi Meir is seemingly not taking a cautious position. He's not worried about the jug breaking, not worried about a person dying. So that now is going to be counter to the way Abaye presented the machlokes between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda. Okay. So to which the Gemara's response is Epoch. So the Gemara says, you know what? So I'll just flip it around. So the Rabbi Meir Chayish Lamisa, Rabbi Yehuda Chayish Lamisa. So the Gemara says, okay, so we'll flip it around. Rabbi Meir is the one who's Choshish Lamisa, and Rabbi Yehuda is of the position that we're not Choshish Lamisa. Detanya, and how do I know that? Because also Lebeim Adolfin Lasukah, Rabbi Meir posts of Rabbi Yehuda Machshir. So the and we go back now to the creation, the formation of a sukkah using an animal as a wall. So Rabbi Meir says that we cannot do so. So Rabbi Meir's posel and Rabbi Yehuda's machshir. Okay, so what comes out now is that Rabbi Meir is taking the cautious approach and Rabbi Yehuda is taking the not cautious approach. So the Gemara says, so basically what we're going to have to do now is we're going to have to flip around the shitas and so that we have a consistency. Right? Rashi, Epoch, Lo Shaninu Abayke de Kamart, Ela Ipcha Shaninu. Abaye, had lo chayish Rabbi Yehuda, v'had lo chayish Rabbi Meir, v'lav melkech yain sheninu Abaye, ela mehach to sukkah, Rabbi Yehuda, lo chayish Rabbi Meir, de chayish. Meaning that the starting point of the discussion is going to be the usage of an animal for a wall, where there, Rabbi Meir takes a cautious position, that you can't do so, right? The Rabbi Meir's posel, and Rabbi Yehuda is machshir. And now it comes out that Rabbi Meir is in fact taking the cautious position, and Rabbi Yehuda is not concerned. And that means that now as we go through that Mishnah Braisa about the woman whose husband went away, where the Mishnah says that she can enjoy Truma, and the Braisa says that she can't enjoy the Truma, so that's going to be Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Meir is taking the more cautious approach, which happens to be consistently where we put Rabbi Meir anyway. He is a more cautious position in general. And it fits in over here. And that means that the wife cannot eat truma the moment he goes away. And the Mishnah that says that she can eat obviously takes the less cautious position And that's the position of Rabbi Yehuda. And now, what are you going to do regarding our discussion about the breaking of the jug? So what we're going to do about that is that that's where we're going to start tomorrow. We'll start tomorrow by explaining now that we have Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda aligned, where we have a consistent theme, both in terms of using an animal as a sukkah, and as a walls of the sukkah, and in terms of the husband going away and the wife's ability to eat truma when her husband is away. So now we have consistently aligned Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda. Now what we're left with, which we're going to clean up tomorrow, is the discussion of the jug that we just got done discussing, where Rav Meir is not worried and Rav Yehuda is worried. We'll have to clean that up tomorrow. And then tomorrow, what we're going to do is that it's going to be part two, meaning we're going to give an entirely different approach in terms of the Shita Rav Meir, in terms of the usage of an animal for a wall. Okay, Adkan. Let's quickly review, just as a quick recap. We started a Mishnah today that talked about a sukkah on a wagon, a sukkah on a boat are fine. And then the Mishnah goes on to describe, but if your sukkah is being supported by a tree, the Heksher sukkah, right? Two of the three walls, or even one of the three walls, is being supported by a tree. So the Mishnah says it's a good sukkah. You just can't climb it. Can't climb it up on Yontif. That's the Mishnah in the Gemara's discussion. Making a sukkah on a boat, machlokes between Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Kiva, and the Gemara says it's really hinging on whether or not the sukkah is a diros keva or diros arai. Rabbi Gamliel holds that a sukkah is a diros keva, therefore making a sukkah on a boat where it's exposed to the element and you know it's not going to last, so that's not going to be a kasher sukkah. And Rabbi Kiva says, no, the sukkah could be a sukkah sarai. As long as it can handle a regular breeze on land, even though you happen to make it on a boat, it would be a kasher sukkah. There was a Maisa Shahaya. They were actually on a boat together on sukkah. So they made a boat. They made the sukkah on the boat. The sukkah blew away. And Rabbi Gamliel is looking at Rabbi Kiva, no. And we didn't hear the response of Rabbi Kiva. But if we could defend Rabbi Kiva, Rabbi Kiva would shrug his shoulders and say, okay, you're right. I don't have a sukkah now. But while it was up, it was a kasher sukkah. The remaining portion of today's daf is putting the sukkah, first of all, mounting it on an animal. Oddly enough, right? The Reb Meir's position over there is that the sukkah would be a good sukkah. Or if you mount on an animal, you can't use it all 7 days of sukkah because you can't ride the animal on Yontif nor on Shabbos. Okay, Reb Meir says that's fine. But in other words, but the sukkah is still a good sukkah. You just can't use it on Shabbos and Yontif. And as far as using the animal as a wool for the sukkah, so Rav Meir says that you cannot do. Now, why can't you do it? So right now, we are in the first approach of the Gemara, which goes into tomorrow's daf, which we started, and that is the approach of Abaye, and that is that Rav Meir is concerned that the animal is going to die. And if, in fact, the animal is going to die, so the animal now is going to diminish in its size, you no longer have the requisite height of a wall, and therefore your sukkah is not going to be a good sukkah. And this is Abaye consistently explaining that, according to Rav Meir, he's choshish lemisa. Happens to be that there's a braisa regarding the two jugs of truma and the 10 jugs of Maisa Rishon, which don't conform with this approach of Abaye. It happens to be that at the beginning of tomorrow, we'll clean that up in terms of explaining it. But that's right now within the first approach that we're presenting, the machlokas between Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda of using an animal as one of the walls of a sukkah.